Thursday, the 19th of February, Kof Hei Shabbat, Rabbi Yonas and Chodi, Amir Akum, Part 1.
Okay, good morning. Mr. Shem, today we'll talk about Amir Akum. The dinim of Amir Akum are detailed, quite involved. Obviously, we're not going to be able to cover everything today. I'd like to revolve today's share about around the following question, which perhaps is something which is very familiar. It's an issue that comes up regularly. I think many people will know what the answer is, but perhaps we'll look at the background, give us the basic principles on which the dinim of Amir al-Akum are based, and that we then be able to adapt that and apply that in other situations. The question that I'd like to discuss today is, let's say on a Friday night, you realize that you've forgotten to set the time switch for the lights, and you like to go to sleep, and the lights in your bedroom are still on, and you'd like to approach a non-Jew and say to a non-Jew, please could you do me a favor, I can't sleep, the lights are on in my room, I wonder if you can help. That would be the question that we'll discuss. May you say that? May you not say that? What can you say? And what are the rules behind that? We'll first start with the principle, the main issa of Amir al-Akum. What's the Makor? Why did Chazal forbid it? And that is as follows. Most poskim, in fact, all poskim agree that the issa of Amir al-Akum is an Issa Drabona. Although the Mechilta brings the Pasuk Lo Ye'osa Kol Melacha, and Rashi brings it, Parshas Boy, that Lo Ye'osa Kol Melacha, Lo Ye'ose, and Rashi says even through a non-Jew, but the Poskim say that's an Asmachta, and the Issa of Amir al-Akum is purely an Issa Drabona. Chazal forbade us to ask a non-Jew to do Melacha on our behalf. Why is that the case? And there's three reasons in the Rishonim why Amir al-Akum is forbidden. The main reason is brought in the Rambam, that Shiloi Tehei Kalo Be'enehem V'Yavoyu La'asot Ba'atzmon. In order that the Yisur Shabbos should not be treated lightly, and so that we will not ourselves come to be over one of the Melachos ourselves. It's human nature that if we can regularly accomplish an Issa through a non-Jew, that the reverence of the Sur Shabbos will be weakened in our minds, and we will easily come to be over one of the malachas on ourselves. And therefore Chazal forbade us to engage a non-Jew, to ask a non-Jew to do malachas for us, so that the reverence of the malachas should be in the right place, and that we will not chas v'shalom be over any Sur Shabbos. That is the reason the Rambam brings why Chazal forbade the Amir al-Akum. Second reason is we say Shabbos and Toshim Shabbos Raglecha. Then the pasuk continues V'chibadetei Me'asoyis Chafatzecho V'daber Dover. And V'daber Dover is the Makor where we're not allowed to engage in business discussions or any other discussion that revolves around a melacha. So Rashi brings in Avodah Zarah that the Daber Davar is another source that forbids us to engage a non-Jew in Melacha on our behalf. If we can ask a non-Jew, we can achieve and accomplish Melacha by asking or engaging a non-Jew to do Melacha for us, then that itself is a prohibition of the Daber Davar. We have involved ourselves in Melacha through asking a non-Jew. So the very asking the non-Jew to do the Melacha is itself a transgression of the Daber Davar, because through that I have engaged in Melacha of Shabbos. So that is the second reason. So number one, the reason Shalote Kalab Einov, that we shouldn't ourselves come to transgress one of the Melacha. Second reason is the very act of asking a non-Jew and involving him in achieving our object is itself a issa of the Daber Davar. Okay, true. The third reason is because of shlichus. Now, although we normally say ein shlech lidvar aveira, And if I ask someone to do an Issa for me, then it's his responsibility, not mine. Ein Shlech L'Dvar. We also say Ein Shlech L'Akum. However, Chazal, said that in when it comes to the Shabbos, we say Yesh Shlech L'Akum L'Chumra, that the non-Jew can be considered to be my shliach when he does a melacha for me, then that is considered as if I myself were doing the melacha. So it's a shlichus lechumra midrabbana. We treat the non-Jew as my shliach, and then when he engages in the melacha, it's considered as if I myself am doing the melacha. Obviously, there are various nafkiminas that would come out lahalacha. Let's say that the basic case would be if I ask a goy to do a melacha for me on Shabbos, and then the non-Jew does that melacha for me on Shabbos. In that case, I've obviously transgressed all three reasons. Number one, I've been over this drabonon of Shalotei Kalabeinov. Because I asked the non-Jew to do it on Shabbos, I was also involved in the Dabadava, in achieving my object through the non-Jew. So that is the second reason. And obviously the third reason, the shlichos la'akum, is considered as if I am doing the melacha on Shabbos myself through the non-Jew, through a shlichos. And therefore I've been over all three reasons would be applicable in those cases. However, what about the situation where I ask a non-Jew to do something for me on Shabbos, and he does it after Shabbos? So I'm involved in the activity of asking him to do a melacha on Shabbos, but he actually does it early after Shabbos. So there you only have the second reason, the Dabadava, because I've engaged a non-Jew in something which I can't do on Shabbos, but since he's only going to do the melacha after Shabbos, then I can't be considered as doing any Issa on Shabbos because he's only doing it after Shabbos. And the drabon of Shlotei Kalabeinov is perhaps not applicable in that case because he's only going to do it for me after Shabbos. What about if I ask a non-Jew to do something for me before Shabbos and he does it on Shabbos? So here we have obviously the case that he's doing it for me on Shabbos. And we also have the reason of Shlotei Kalabeinov, so because he's going to be doing the melacha for me on Shabbos, but there's no v'dabedavo. There's one case where only the reason of shlichus is applicable, and that is in a case where I don't ask the non-Jew at all, and he does it on his own for me. He does a melacha for me, and the example would be in the case of, for example, my employee. My employee is a sechir yoim. I pay him to work for me. His time is mine. Whatever he does during the time that he's employed is devoted to me, and he is committed to me in his time, and therefore it's considered that whatever he does during that time is for me, is my shliach. And therefore if a non-Jew engages an employee engages in a melacha on your behalf on Shabbos, although there may not be any isra of a dabadova because he does it on his own, or the problem of Shlotei Kalabein also might not apply because I never asked him to do anything. But since he is considered to be my employee, then he's considered to be my shliach, and that would also be forbidden. But I'm not going to discuss the issue of an employee today, but that's one of the examples where that reason is applicable. So that we've covered really all cases where we are involving a non-Jew, and for whatever reason, it's forbidden to ask a non-Jew either Shlotei Kalabeinov, that we should treat Shabbos with the appropriate reverence and not be over a melacha myself, or that the Dabadov, the actual engaging the non-Jew, is itself an Issa, or the question of Shlichus. Now, if your next door neighbor comes and, who's a non-Jew, comes and tells you, I have a leak, my boiler is leaking, or the plumbing in my house is not working properly, or I've got a problem with my electricity, and he's asking you for your help every day, every time during the week you help him. Once it happens on Shabbos, he knocks on your door and he says to you, what can I do? Here, you're allowed to tell the guy what to do. You're allowed to involve yourself in chol dika activities in the sense that you can tell him what he's allowed to do in his own house with his own materials. Because he is doing the melacha, it's for him. I'm not engaging myself in any melacha, and I'm not telling him to do anything for me. So you're allowed to be helpful, and you're allowed to tell him what to do. However, you're not allowed to give him your tools, you're not allowed to give him something, any of your own tools, or he's not allowed to even take any of your tools out of your house. So if, for example, he wants to mow his own lawn on Shabbos, and he sees you've got a lawnmower and you perhaps regularly lend it to him, and he wants to come and collect it himself, he's not allowed to use your tools to do even his own melacha. Because for him there's no issa, and but I'm not engaging in any issa. I'm only telling him what he's allowed to do. The Chazal never forbade us to get involved in the melacha of a non-Jew. A non-Jew himself is allowed to do that, for him it's permitted, and therefore we're not restricted in telling him what he can do with his own things. But he's not allowed to use my things. Okay. That is the main issa of instructing a non-Jew to do anything for me on Shabbos. Now, in addition to the issa of instructing a non-Jew, engaging him to do work for me, there's a second prohibition which Chazal instituted, and that is the issa of benefiting from a melacha that a non-Jew does for me. Now, we have to first understand what is considered to be a benefit, and the situations where that would be forbidden, and perhaps where it would be allowed. What is called benefit? So Chazal said that benefit is considered something which is a new, significant, or substantial result of the melacha. So, for example, if a non-Jew cooks something for me, or boils some water for me, that is a significant benefit, a significant new thing that I couldn't have before. Perhaps the water was cold, wasn't suitable for my current purposes, or the food was raw and I couldn't eat it. That we have achieved something, and Chazal forbade us to benefit from that which was created by the melacha that the non-Jew did. So he has provided for us some substantial, significant benefit, positive benefit, that we couldn't have before. That is considered to be a direct benefit from the melacha, and that is what Chazal forbade. However, an indirect benefit, something which is a byproduct of the melacha, not directly produced from the melacha. So, for example, in the case of switching a light off, when a light goes off and now it enables me to sleep in the dark room, we don't consider the benefit of being able to sleep as a direct outcome from the melacha. What melacha did the non-Jew do? He turned the light off. So now it's dark. Turning the light off itself isn't a reason for me to be able to sleep. I can sleep when it's dark, but I can't sleep when it's light. So he's taken away a situation that's preventing me from having a benefit. But the benefit is not considered to be a direct result of the melacha. Perhaps we can understand it better if we use the example of an alarm clock. Let's say you have an alarm clock ringing, and we can't sleep when the alarm clock is ringing. It's making a noise. Now, if the non-Jew turns off the alarm clock for me, then we can now sleep in a quiet room. But we can't say that my sleeping is a direct benefit from the fact that now the alarm clock is off. It's an indirect benefit. It's a brought about as a secondary result from the actual melacha.
What if the lights were off and we asked them to put them on?
But in the case of what Dr. Harris says, where you ask the non-Jew to put the light on, now what we can do in the room where the light is on is considered to be a considerable benefit and a significant benefit, more than what I could do before. So, for example, if it's dark in the room and I can't read or I can't eat, and the non-Jew now puts the light on, now we say that the benefit that is introduced by the light is a direct benefit from the result. I can now do things that I couldn't do before with a positive benefit that the light has introduced. And therefore, even in a situation where you haven't asked the non-Jew, you haven't been involved in the first issa, which is asking the non-Jew to do a melacha for me, but I still may not have a considerable benefit from the melacha that the non-Jew did. So therefore, even if I didn't ask the non-Jew to put a light on, and he, but he did it out of his own accord, I still may not benefit from it, because Chazal introduced that issue as well, because if I were able to benefit from a melacha that a non-Jew does for me, I would then come to do that melacha myself, and it's, Chazal forbade that as well. And that is an independent issa. That is a very, very important point. It's an independent issa for the issa of asking a non-Jew to do a melacha for me. Even if I haven't transgressed that, I still am not allowed to benefit. But if there is not, if we don't treat the benefit to be a considerable new benefit, but it is a removal of a deterrent or something that is preventing me from doing a melacha, then I'm allowed to benefit from the melacha, provided I did not transgress the first melacha.
Did you say even if he did it from his own accord, you can't?
Yeah.
So what do you do with the room now? We're a Shabbos table of a Christian guest. Where am I going?
Okay, we won't consider today, if you don't mind, the situations where I'm allowed to ask a non-Jew. There could be reasons where...
Okay.
So, if the non-Jew did the melacha for herself...
No.
Well, if
no,
she did,
she sees these 15 guests in the room, she sees there's no light, she knows you need the light in the room, she passed by, she puts it on.
Okay, another point that we have to mention is that if I could benefit in some way already from the current situation, and I could have the benefit that is now being introduced, but I could have that benefit in some way already beforehand, then we don't consider this new benefit as a significant benefit to prevent me having any hanor from it. So for example, in where it's a daylight and there's quite a lot of light in the room, and I could already read or see or eat in the room, but it perhaps is a little bit uncomfortable for me, but I can already achieve that object in some minimal way, then Chazal did not say that that is considered to be a significant direct benefit. It is an additional benefit. And so as long as I can already have had the, and continue to have had the benefit without the new introduction, then I may continue to enjoy that benefit even with a new introduction, as long as the original situation is the same. So for example, if you have two candles, and one is about to go out, and the non-Jew lights a second candle, then you can benefit from the light as long as the first candle is still there. But once it goes away, then you can't, because now that is a new benefit from the melacha that the non-Jew did. However, if the non-Jew did the melacha for himself, so he comes into the room and it's dark, and he puts a light up, and he wants to do, and he's doing that so that he can enjoy the benefit, then you may even tell him to leave the light on. Okay, you may even tell him to leave it, because since he is doing it for himself, you never asked him. It's not considered to be a benefit from the, it's not considered that you are having a benefit from the melacha the non-Jew did. All you're doing is saying leave the situation as it is. That is permitted. And where there's, let's say, a Yisrael and a non-Jew in the room, and you're both benefiting from the melacha, then we have to look at the primary motive. What was the primary motive that for which the non-Jew did the melacha? Did he do it for himself, which is what we normally say when there's a yid and a non-Jew, or we go after the majority, or perhaps there's some significant person in the room for which he did it for? We would have to look at that particular situation. But if he did it for himself, then I can benefit even once the non-Jew is no longer benefiting from it. So that might help you in that situation. Okay. Okay, so we've covered now the basic principles of benefiting from melacha that a non-Jew did for me, and we also talked about the main issa of asking a non-Jew. Before we can resolve our question, we have to look at a third aspect, and that is how may I hint to a non-Jew, what may I say, what may I not say. And here it's a little bit complicated, but The following two principles are very important. There's what's called remiza derech tzivui and remiza shelo derech tzivui. Remiza derech tzivui is a hint, but there is some wording or question that you are asking the non-Jew to be involved. In your words, you are asking for his help. And remiza shelo b'derech tzivui is simply a statement of the fact. You are hinting to him what the situation is, but whether he himself gets involved or not is then left up to him. It's not based on what you have said. So for example, if you say, excuse me please, can you do me a favor? The light in my bedroom is on and I can't sleep. So here, you haven't specifically asked the non-Jew to switch the light off for you, but you've asked him to be involved. If he now responds to your comment, it is as a result of what you said. You have said to him, can you do me a favor? Please, can you help me? That is called remiza derech tzivui. I have now engaged his help by what I said. If you just say, the light is on in my room and I can't sleep, all you've done is made a comment about the statement about the current situation, and you have hinted that you need some help, but the fact that you've not said anything about the non-Jew's involvement in resolving the situation, you've left that up to him. He can now decide for himself, do I respond to your comment or do I ignore it? And if he responds, we say he's responding because that's what he wanted to do, not because that's what you said. Therefore, you may say, the light is on in my room and I can't sleep, but you mustn't say, can you do me a favor or please can you help? Because that is, then he's responding to that question. You have now engaged his help, and that is what Chazal forbade. So you can make a suggestive statement with a request. A suggestive statement which includes a request is not allowed, but a suggestive statement that just makes a comment about the current situation and he responds on his own is permitted.
The light is off and I can't see.
Well, that would be okay as far as the suggestive statement, but since when the non-Jew then puts the light on, you are now going to be benefiting from the melacha that he did for you. So even if you don't, even if you've not transgressed the problem of asking the non-Jew, but you're still not allowed to benefit. So that is why these two isurim work independently. It's not that if I can hint to a non-Jew, then I can do anything. That's not so. There's a second isur involved that you're not allowed to benefit. So therefore, the fact that we can make a suggestive comment to a non-Jew is only going to help us in a situation where there is no direct benefit, no positive benefit. So either I could have already benefited from the situation, I could already have this benefit even without the introduction of the new. So let's say it's adequately lit so that I can read or eat, but it's more comfortable. So then that is considered an additional benefit. In that situation, you may be maramis, you may make a suggestive comment that does not engage his help. But in a situation where there's a direct benefit, that you can't do. But in a situation where we're turning the light off, or let's say the column is boiling and it's going to burn, and you want to tell the non-Jew, you know, my cholent is burning, it's a shame that it's going to get burnt. That's a comment about the situation. If he now turns the gas a little bit lower, so that's an issur drabanan. My mirakim applies even in issur drabanan. But you haven't engaged his help, you haven't made a comment that is requesting him to be involved. You've just made a comment about the fact, and he implies that he can help you. And the benefit is not considered to be a direct benefit. He's only taking away something, preventing it getting worse, and allowing me to enjoy what I already have. So it's not considered to be a new direct benefit, and therefore in that case, it's also permitted. Therefore...
So he says, do you want me to put on the light for you?
Okay.
And then you're stuck.
That is a very difficult situation. It's not difficult halakhically, it's difficult because what do you say to the non-Jew? Okay. If you say yes, do you want me to put the light on? And you say yes, please. That is obviously forbidden because when he then responds, he's responding to your request that he should be involved. You can repeat the situation. You could say, I can't sleep with a light on. I have thought about whether you could say that would solve the problem. It could be that that might be permitted, but there are poskim that don't allow. To say that would be helpful, I think, is very similar to saying yes. But if something which is like indirectly could be, would be, but the easiest thing to do, if you can, is to repeat the situation and to say, you know, I can't sleep when the light's on, or to... I think perhaps you could say it's up to you, but again, you've got some like involvement there, you've got some little request where we respond to. The best thing to do is to repeat the situation, perhaps say it in slightly different wording, but then you haven't, he's not responding to you. Okay, Amir Hashem, next time, we'll look at the situations where Amir al-Akam is mutter. I'm not talking about that today. Today we're just talking, we'll talk about it. But today I'm talking about the situations, the basic issues, so that we basically understand the principles, and then we can look in Mitzvah Shem another time as to when we can apply them, but they're a heter. But here, these are the rules. So the rules are, we're not allowed to ask a guy to do anything for me. We're not allowed to hint, but in a way where he will respond to my request. And according to some poskim, you're not even allowed to say what the malacha is. So according to some poskim, you're not allowed to say it's my Shabbos today and I'm not allowed to turn the lights off. But according to other poskim, that would be permitted, because the issue revolves around the following case. The halacha is that when it comes to a fire, you're allowed to say to a non-Jew, kolam achabe einei mafsid. You're allowed to say to a non-Jew in a situation of a fire, chas v'shalom, anyone who puts out the fire, ain't mustard, won't lose out. So here, he is, if the non-Jew responds, he is clearly responding to that request for my help, because he's going to get paid for it. But he's clearly responding to that request. That chazal only permitted in the case of a fire, i.e., in a normal case, I'm not allowed to say, kol ha-machaba ain't mustard. I'm not allowed to say to a non-Jew, if you put the light off in my room, I'll pay you. Now, the question is, why not? If you say it's because you're not allowed to mention the melacha, it's very simple. By saying I'm not allowed to put kol ha-machaber, anyone who puts the light off, I'm mentioning the melacha, and he is then responding to the fact that he knows that I can't do that, i.e. please do it for me. We can understand why it should be forbidden. But if you say it's a... that you're allowed to mention the melacha, then the reason of kolam achab einem asid is not why it's forbidden in the case in a normal case, is not because I mentioned the melacha, it's because he's responding to my request. So there's two ways to understand that in the poskim as to whether you may say it's my Shabbos today and I'm not allowed to do this. According to some poskim, you're not allowed to say that because you've mentioned the melacha, and according to others, it's permitted because he's not responding to a request of mine to get involved. If he responds, it's because he wants to do it himself and not because I asked it. So I think the poskim are making, Rav Shlomo Zalman is making about that, and therefore it would be permitted according to Rav Shlomo Zalman to say to a non-Jew, it's my Shabbos today and I can't turn the light off. So if we go back to now, our original question, what we started off with was, am I allowed to say to Nadia, please, can you do me a favor, can you help? Clearly you can't say that, because even if you haven't mentioned the melacha, but he is now responding to my request to be involved, and therefore that is included in the Isra of Amir al-Akum, you can't say that. What you can say is, according to Rav Shlomo Zalman, it's my Shabbos today, I can't do this. Or you can say, the light is on in my room, and I can't sleep. And if he says to you, what can I do, what can I do to help you, you've got to repeat that as best you can in a way that's not embarrassing. But you shouldn't, definitely not say yes, or you shouldn't say, yeah, that'll be helpful. And you may do that in situations where there is no direct benefit from what he's done. So there's either it removes a manair, something that is preventing me from enjoying that, or it's in a situation where I could already do that, have that benefit, and it's just now enhancing that. For example, if it's daylight and you wanted to put the light on. So I think that resolves that question with a little bit of background into what the halachas are about Amir al-Aqam, and that gives us a framework in which to now look at Mitzvah Shem next time, the situations where Amir al-Aqam is actually mutter.